order admitted. His countenance bore as little the marks of self-denial as his habit indicated contempt of worldly splendour. This worthy churchman rode upon a well-fed ambling mule, whose furniture was highly decorated, and whose bridle, according to the fashion of the day, was ornamented with silver bells. The companion of the church dignitary was a man past 40, thin, strong, tall and muscular, an athletic figure which long fatigue and constant exercise seemed to have left none of the softer part of the human form, having reduced the whole to brawn, bones and sinews. The upper dress of this personage resembled that of his companion in shape, being a long monastic mantle. On the right shoulder of the mantle there was cut, in white cloth, a cross of a peculiar form. This upper robe concealed what at first view seemed rather inconsistent with its form, a shirt, namely, of linked mail, with sleeves and gloves of the same. He rode not a mule, like his companion, but a strong hackney for the road, to save his gallant war-horse, which a squire led behind, fully accoutred for battle. On one side of the saddle hung a short battle-axe, richly inlaid with damascene carving. On the other, the rider's plumed headpiece and hood of mail, with a long two-handed sword, used by the chivalry of the period. The whole appearance of this warrior and his retinue was wild and outlandish. The dress of his squires was gorgeous, and his eastern attendants wore silver collars round their throats, and bracelets of the same metal upon their swarthy legs and arms. The singular appearance of this cavalcade not only attracted the curiosity of Wamba, but excited even that of his less volatile companion. The monk he instantly knew to be the prior of Jorvaux Abbey, well known for many miles around as the lover of the chase, of the banquet, and, if fame did him not wrong, of other worldly pleasures, still more inconsistent with his monastic vows. Prior Aymer, therefore, and his character were well known to our Saxon serfs, who made their rude obeisance and received his benedicite me fils in return. "Tell me," said the prior to Wamba, "the way to Cedric the Saxons. You cannot be ignorant of it, and it is your duty to direct the wanderer even when his character is less sanctified than ours. Your reverences must hold on this path till you come to a sunken cross," answered the jester. "Then take the path to the left, for there are four which meet there, and I trust your reverences will obtain shelter before the storm comes on." The abbot thanked his sage adviser, and the cavalcade, setting spurs to their horses, rode on as men do who wish to reach their inn before the bursting of a night storm. As their horses' hoofs died away, Girth said to his companion, "If they follow thy wise direction, the reverend fathers will hardly reach Rotherwood this night."
"No,"
said the jester, grinning, "but they may reach Sheffield if they have good luck, and that's as fit a place for them. I'm not so bad a woodsman as to show the dog where the deer lies, if I have no mind he should chase him." "Thou art right," said Girth. "It were ill that Aymer saw the Lady Rowena, and it were worse, it may be, for Cedric to quarrel, as is most likely he would, with this military monk. But, like good servants, let us hear and see, and say nothing." "Prior Aymer," said the Templar, Sir Brian de Bois Guilbert, as they rode on, "you are a man of gallantry, learned in the study of beauty, and as expert as a troubadour in all matters concerning the arete of love. But I shall expect much beauty in this celebrated Rowena to counterbalance the self-denial and forbearance which I must exert if I am to court the favour of such a seditious churl as you have described her father, Cedric."
"Cedric is not her father," replied the prior, "and is but of remote relation, but his ward is as dear to him as if she were his own child. Of her beauty you shall soon be judge. But here is the clown's sunken cross.